Hello, Tempest fans. I am the Midnight Host, and I want to invite you to join me every Friday as I enjoy a new horror short story. For fans of The Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt, and Creep Show, Don't Fall Asleep is a podcast and YouTube channel featuring modern and classic horror stories. Narrated by Spencer Dillehay, the narrator for Tempest Investigations. Find us on YouTube and in podcast form. Search Don't Fall Asleep Channel on YouTube and Don't Fall Asleep Podcast in Google or your player of choice. Whatever you do, have a pint of Bob's Tail Ale before you go, and don't fall asleep.
Scott grumbled deep in his throat, stabbing the end button with his thumb. The last 10 minutes, the reception came and went, leaving him guessing at his father-in-law's demands even more than usual.
"That was unpleasant," he said.
"He knows we're on vacation," Tina told him. "It'll be fine."
For the next hour, he replayed the meeting over in his head. Tina should have been driving. Now he'd have to memorize the action items when he could have just written them down on a gas station receipt or the rental car agreement. From the back seat, Nathaniel yelled above his tablet's tonal melody to complain of hunger for at least the 10th time. To Scott, the whine held physical force, like a spitball pinging off the back of his head, though he could do nothing more than drive on.
"We're looking for a place to stop," Tina assured Nathaniel. "Right, Daddy?"
She looked at Scott, eyebrows raised, as if the last hour of desolate roadways was somehow his doing. Scott angled his head to peer into the back seat at his 5-year-old son, meeting the boy's sagging eyes with his own.
"We'll stop at the first place we can," he sighed, and leaned toward Tina. "If you just go to sleep."
"He's hungry, Scott. What do you expect?"
He expected her to cave and give him the small brown pill containing just enough melatonin to knock him out for an hour, enough time to find something resembling civilization.
"I'm not going to drug our kid," she said, as if reading his mind.
Then she returned to Sudoku on her smartphone. The wet mountain air over the past 3 days had already turned the pills into a sort of paste, nothing like the desert air they'd come from. Their first night of lingering sun, staying in teepees outside of Glacier National Park, had lasted forever. Nathaniel refused to sleep because it wasn't nighttime, despite the bright blue sky hanging in there till 10 o'clock. Not until Scott dipped a finger in the brown paste that had been the melatonin pills and put it into Nathaniel's mouth did the boy finally settle in sleep, only to wake at 6 the following morning.
"You want to check the GPS again?" he asked now.
Tina huffed, but then locked her phone and began punching keys on the GPS, looking for food.
"There's a Starbucks 100 miles away," she said. "And a pho place in Helena. That's only 85 miles. "I want a soy steamer," Nathaniel barked,
his mantra whenever the word Starbucks entered conversation.
"Sorry, bud, we're not near a Starbucks. Not yet. We might hit one by tonight."
"What about that?"
Tina asked and pointed out the windshield. Scott expected sarcasm, like he might look up and find a sign selling earthworms or more boysenberries. Despite the surfeit of boysenberries over the last few days, he'd happily pay top dollar for a basket of them if it meant appeasing Nate, maybe getting him to sleep. But no, the sign read simply, "Food," as if a black label supermarket item. And below, a permanent sign read, "Open."
"Well, it looks like they're open," he said, his own words now dripping sarcasm.
He checked himself.
"But, yeah, let's have a look.
Nothing like hole-in-the-wall grub.
He turned down a dirt road full of washboards. It had held gravel once, but needed more. Montana's constant wind had all but eroded the path. Another sign atop the wooden building confirmed the one at the road, but included the promise of beer, pool, and video poker. It reminded Scott of the wooden cabins of Gatlinburg back east, all unfinished lumber and endless coats of lacquer. One truck sat in the lot, an older model Ford. They got out, Nathaniel's play pack in hand, and entered via a winding walkway that seemed to cater to the handicapped, but which connected directly to the gravel lot. Almost too faint to hear, country music played over the single outside speaker, which grew in volume as they passed through the double doors. The center room was all bar, with a small kitchen nestled behind the rows of alcohol and handful of beer taps. To the left, down two steps, was a pool hall. To the right, a stand of DVDs for rent at $3 a day. Animal heads lined the high vaulted ceilings, seemingly with no attempt at uniformity. Some mounts shone black, others wood grain. Some fish, several deer, and an elk above the entrance to the pool hall. Despite being the only customers at noon on a Saturday, the place reflected a steady income, with none of the decay Scott expected. He shook his head. Where on earth does a place like this... But he silenced himself when he spotted the bartender. She'd come from the back with her hands full of clean pints.
Oh, hello, she said. Y'all can sit anywhere you like.
He looked to their immediate left, to the 6 4-top tables, the same lacquered wood as the structure itself. From the center, each radiated a soft yellow glow from a candle encased in frosted glass.
Thank you,
Tina piped up, and guided Nathaniel to one of the tables.
I want to play the game,
Nathaniel said, finger aimed over Scott's shoulder as he carried him. He turned to see a line of video poker machines against the wall. Above them, a narrow LED bar proclaimed the progressive pot now sat at just over $52,000.
That's a game for bigs, buddy, he said. Won't be able to play those till you're older.
Tina looked behind her before saying,
And even then, it's a colossal waste of money.
Scott laughed, and the traveling tension between them dissolved. He sat, automatically moving the candle to the end farthest from Nathaniel.
Glad you saw this place, he said.
He stretched, arms out.
Me too, she said, and smiled. You should try a local beer, babe.
She indicated the taps on the wall.
Anything look familiar?
He squinted to try and make out the names, but shrugged.
I will, but none'll be familiar. We drank nothing but good old Bud Light back in college. Only the best.
She opened the menu.
Well, we're not in Great Falls yet, so you can have a decent beer and not pretend to like horse piss.
She slapped a hand over her mouth at the swear, and they both jerked ahead to Nathaniel. Thankfully, he was coloring in one of his books. Both parents giggled and held hands across the table.
You having fun?
She asked Scott. He nodded, only lying a little.
Yeah, I am. A lot of driving, but it's beautiful. No more work now.
In truth, the appeal of the mountains had waned after Glacier. For one thing, nothing lower down could compete with the Sun Road. But for another, even Majesty lost its luster after a few hours of winding roads and spotty cell service. The waitress pulled back the bar counter on the far side, approached them, then dispersed a tray full of waters. Scott instantly grabbed Nathaniel's away before his son could tip it over trying to get a swallow.
Y'all ready to order?
Scott looked at Tina and laughed.
Sorry, we haven't looked yet, but I'll have a local beer.
It was technically summer and triple digits back home, but the mountains had all but frozen him during the last few days, so a summer ale seemed absurd. Something dark, I guess. he said.
We got moose drool?
Tina raised her eyebrows and nodded playfully at him.
That sounds great, he said.
And I'll take a blue moon, Tina said.
We got shock top,
the waitress said.
That's about the same. Water's fine.
The waitress wrote something in her pad nonetheless, then tapped the laminated menu in front of Nathaniel.
The kids' menu's on the back, sweetie.
She smiled and turned for the bar. Tina hummed.
Hamburger, hot dog, or chicken tenders?
She said, drawing out the words to add a sarcastic sweetness to them. He shrugged.
Did you expect tofu burgers and kale chips?
She smacked him with the menu, the sound like warbled sheet metal.
If they can do hamburgers, they can do grilled cheese, he said.
We'll ask for Havarti with heirloom tomatoes.
She popped him with the menu again, this time with more force.
I won't apologize for having standards, she said, teeth together in mock anger.
When Scott's beer arrived, they ordered a cheeseburger with no meat to keep it simple, jalapeno poppers, onion rings, and potato skins without the bacon. The waitress betrayed her slight annoyance when her plastered smile crept into a resigned frown as she gathered the menus.
Be right back, she sang.
Scott waited till the woman walked out of earshot.
I feel fatter already, he said, and patted the small paunch at his waist.
You could have gone for the side salad, Tina said. Iceberg lettuce with just a touch of our gallon bucket ranch.
5 stars, he whispered, as if cheering it.
Tina pulled out her phone.
I'd inform Yelp if I had any service. Maybe they got dial-up we can use.
He sucked in his teeth.
But does your fancy space phone have a jack?
She pulled him in for a kiss, and just as their lips met, the door swung open. 2 men entered, so alike in posture and gait that they could have been brothers, and may have been. Each wore tan coveralls atop flannel shirts, buttoned high, the sleeves rolled up to reveal hairy arms taut with muscle. Both kept short beards and a messy patch of hair, making their eyes seem beady in their sockets. They said nothing when they spotted Scott and Tina, but nodded tightly before heading to the bar.
Hey, Ed! Hey, Augie!
The bartender said from in back. Had she seen them, or were the two so predictable that the timing alone had ID'd them?
Darla,
the nearest said. He offered a single finger skyward, either ordering a beer or saying hello. Scott couldn't tell.
Look at the lumberjacks, Daddy,
Nathaniel said. He pointed at the men for good measure. Scott patted his son's back and pulled him further into the table.
We don't know they're lumberjacks, buddy. We can't assume that.
He kept his eyes down in case the men had taken offense. No doubt they'd heard Nate.
Not lumberjacks, the nearest said. We work the oil fields, little man.
He kept his bottom lip against his teeth like tobacco was nestled there. He confirmed this by pulling a plastic bottle from his cargo pocket, already a third full of dark bubbled spit, and added a slimy trail of saliva to it.
Isn't that cool? Tina said. These men get oil from the ground that powers some people's cars.
The nearest said,
Powers your car too, my man.
Tina tilted her head.
Well, most cars. Ours is electric, but most of them do need gas.
She smiled up at the man, but he pivoted, stared a moment at Scott, and then turned back around.
Our rental takes gas,
Scott said, loud enough for the men to hear.
So for right now, we need oil to take this trip we're on. Wouldn't get very far without it.
Tina coughed and situated her napkin across one thigh.
Only because the rental car company didn't have any Teslas.
Scott spoke through tight lips.
I don't think Nate cares about all that.
Might be good for him to know where we get our gas. She coughed again.
Well, then we'd better book a ticket to the Middle East, because that's how far most of it travels.
It's a dang shame, too, came Darla's voice. Scott hadn't even heard her approach. We got a zillion barrels just sitting in the ground here, and plenty of boys to pull it out. But we still get our gas from a country that hates all that we stand for.
She laid the food on the table, the onion rings just inches from Nathaniel. Scott grabbed the plate, and a searing fire passed through his fingers as he moved it out of his son's reach.
Be careful, Darla said. The plates are hot. Y'all enjoy.
Don't suppose you're much better off with a Tesla, ma'am, said one of the men from the bar. What you think powers that electric car? Coal, more than likely. Robbing Peter to pay Paul, as they say.
He chuckled, like he'd made the best joke ever. Tina blinked several times, the motion seeming to keep her from spitting out a rejoinder back at him, and for that, Scott was thankful.
How are the poppers? Scott asked Tina.
She cleared her throat and swallowed visibly before turning back to the table. She picked up a popper, shaped in a perfectly formed cylinder, tapered on the ends.
Just like Mom used to make, if Mom had a penchant for microwave cooking, that is.
She dropped the popper, but grabbed a few onion rings. Scott prepared Nathaniel a plate, cutting things into bite-sized pieces, despite the boy's grunts of protest. If Scott had left it whole instead, Nate would suddenly demand bite-sized pieces. They ate in silence for several minutes, punctuated occasionally by Nathaniel's sound effects. Laser blasters at the meatless burger, monster attacks on the onion rings, and bear claws to the single potato skin he seemed willing to tackle.
Just eat, buddy, Scott told him, his mantra at least a dozen times per meal.
At home, a show on his tablet satisfied Nate, but out in restaurants, Tina insisted he go without media and join them while eating. Too often, this turned into Scott doting on Nate while Tina ate on as if oblivious to the struggle. The men at the bar grew louder as they moved from one beer into the next and another. The translucent liquid in their glasses told Scott they preferred, or at least drank, some light macro brew, probably whatever was cheapest. He finished his own drink. At putting it down, he caught the stare of one of the men, the one on the far side of the tobacco connoisseur. Something close to a sneer crossed the man's face, the disdain radiating off him. Perhaps pluckier because of the regulars, even Darla's distaste grew bolder. She slapped down the check without a word, and even said to Nathaniel,
"Eat up, or I might just have to bring over a big old steak."
Her laugh came more as a cackle and bounced off the walls as she turned her back to them.
"You guys ready?"
Scott asked. The fried food had bloated his stomach. The tasteless poppers, without a hint of heat, had overshadowed his otherwise excellent beer. The bill came to less than 20, the highlight of an otherwise forgettable lunch. He put down a 20 in his last three singles, his pint glass atop them. The room fell silent as they rose to leave. Even the country music seemed to abide the quiet energy, the end of one song preceding a long string of dead air.
"But Daddy, I want to play the video game,"
Nathaniel said, tugging Scott toward the poker machines.
"Those are for bigs," Scott said. "You can play when you're older."
"Oh, that's fine,"
Darla said, bussing the table.
"He can play."
Scott looked to Tina. Her eyes had grown wide. The two men pivoted in their seats to watch the scene.
"Yay!"
Nate said. He climbed into the leather chair in front of one of the machines.
"I want to play this one."
Scott shrugged to his wife and opened his wallet. All he had left after paying for lunch was another 20 and a fiver. He was about to tell Nate that he didn't have any dollars to play with. He certainly wasn't going to take one from Darla's tip money. But when Nate spotted the bills, he said,
"There's one. Use that one, Daddy. Let me put it in, though."
"Littlest gambler you've had in here, I'll bet," Tina said to the room, and smiled. Scott couldn't tell if that smile was genuine, only amused, or that kind that he was supposed to know meant stark disapproval.
"Don't matter either way," the tobacco lover said. "Old Jake set those odds so low, you might as well burn your money."
The other chuckled, slapping his friend's arm.
"Old Jake?"
Scott asked. Nathaniel slid the five spot home, and an odd musical sequence, something like the tonal leitmotif of an alien spaceship in a 50s sci-fi flick, trilled until the credits had been added. Darla huffed her disapproval, either at Jake in absentia or at the two men's critique of him.
"They're not lying. I'd be surprised if you could so much as get a dollar out of that machine. Jake Wellington put in the progressive pot during the fracking boom, thought it might encourage the regulars to part with some of their old dollars in hopes of hitting it big."
She looked around as if checking for others.
"It worked."
She pointed to the rectangular sign above the machines.
"God knows how much money the boys put into those things to get it that high. But after all the sites shut down, Jake was going to pull the machines and put them elsewhere."
"Bullshit," the man said. "Sorry about my language, but it's true. You can't fill your little machines week after week and not deliver on the pot."
Nathaniel slapped a few buttons before finding the one marked "deal," which blinked in red. Darla nodded.
"Yeah, the boys, even Ned, the owner, said he'd better just leave them where they are till someone wins the jackpot. I don't know how many of them machines Jake owns, but instead of just letting it happen and taking his machines with him, he cranks the odds down so low ain't nobody gonna win that pot for 100 years. Stubborn fool."
"I'm gonna win,"
Nathaniel said, and everyone laughed. The tension eased out of the room with a mutual ground established, if only to the tune of Scott pissing away $5 to the disposed Jake Wellington. The first deal came up as random as possible, nothing to pair and nothing close to a flush or straight.
"Jeez, that's ugly,"
Scott said, laughing.
"Which ones you want to keep, buddy?"
"I'd hold on to that queen," Ed said. "Get rid of the rest."
Scott pointed to the hold button beneath the queen and then hit the draw button himself. Nothing matched, only the same random assortment of cards as before the draw.
"Old Jake wins again,"
Ed said, and slapped his thigh with a free hand. Darla was making lazy circles with a dirty rag across their table, eyes lingering on the poker screen. She finished by sliding the guttering candle back to dead center. Deal. Slop again.
"Best go for the straight,"
Darla said, and looked down at her work as if someone else had spoken.
"The hell you say,"
Augie piped up.
"Inside straight is a sucker play."
She turned on him.
"You see something better?"
Augie stared. Scott leaned to the side to offer a better view.
"Eh, guess not. Good luck, kiddo."
Scott followed their advice, guiding Nathaniel to push the right buttons. Another draw, and again nothing. The regulars scoffed this time, but stared on for the next round. Scott looked up to find Tina checking her phone's lock screen for the time, then offering a fake smile. The novelty could only last so long anyway. Already Nathaniel had begun to squirm, discovering that video poker bore no resemblance to any of the Lego games on his console back home.
"Might as well go out with a bang,"
Scott said, and hit the max bet button, cueing the remaining $3 on a single deal.
"Big spender,"
Darla said, a trace of her erstwhile sarcasm creeping in. The deal looked marginally better, some face cards and a joker. Right away, Nathaniel hit the hold button beneath the joker.
"I'm gonna get you, joker,"
he said, in his best and cutest imitation of Batman's husky voice. He reached for the draw button when Darla piped up.
Better keep that king and queen too, sweetie. Never know.
Nathaniel obeyed, and he and Scott tapped the draw button at the same time. The order was meaningless. With the Joker in the mix and a blend of face and point cards, Scott ignored the draw completely and spun around on the stool.
That was fun, he said.
Then the machine began its tonal trilling, as if announcing a UFO about to land. He turned back around and watched, transfixed as the credit total ticked higher and higher.
Did we win something?
Tina asked, slinking over to watch the numbers grow. Before Scott could answer, a tinny siren sounded from above. He jerked back as if stung, then noticed the ring of lights circling the progressive total, which flashed several different colors on the LED marquee.
Pretty lights, Nathaniel said, and looked around the room for affirmation.
Scott's gaze followed, but all he saw on the faces of the two men and their server was incredulous gawking. For what seemed like half a minute, no one spoke. The only sound was the trilling of the dollars adding up on the machine. Scott turned back to look at the screen, and then a voice behind him confirmed what his eyes were already piecing together. Royal flush, the server said. Her tone was matter of fact, but without a hint of elation. The words could have come from an alien ambassador, versed in English, but unaware of the weight of such a thing.
I think we won, Tina said slowly.
A smile grew on her face, but when she looked around the room, her budding excitement steadied into something like disbelief.
That's pretty crazy, Scott said, and met the eyes of first Darla and then Ed and Augie at the bar.
They appeared stunned, certainly, and Scott felt the urge to bolt, just take his ticket and head for the door with his family before anyone realized what had happened. But when he hit the print button, the machine ignored him. It continued to ring up his winnings. The credits piled up slowly, but without pause. The lilt of the chiptune sound effect moved from slightly annoying to aggravating. He wanted to cover the speaker and silence the sound, but it seemed to come from all over and filled the space.
"It's gonna take a while," Augie said, his face tight. "That's a lot of money to add up."
"Lot of our money," Ed said, just loud enough to hear.
Adrenaline pushed its way into Scott's system, starting with his stomach. A sickness, like he'd been kicked in the groin, spread through him, but complemented with a frenetic energy that had him shaking where he stood. His jaw tightened, and his eyes seemed too big for their sockets, darting around from person to person.
"Excuse me?"
Tina said, as if just processing what Ed had muttered.
"We won that jackpot. We'll be happy to buy a round of drinks, even spring for your lunch, but..."
"Tina," Scott said, and shook his head in tight movements.
"What? We're not allowed to be happy about this?"
Her trademark incredulity surfaced, where wide eyes, upturned eyebrows, and a tilted head were supposed to erase all doubt as to her authority. It worked on Nathaniel. Scott supposed it had worked on him in the past as well. But the two men continued to stare, and despite the buzz of some machine in the kitchen, the server seemed rooted to her spot by their table as well.
"We're just as surprised as all of you," Scott said.
He gestured to the machine, which continued to collate their winnings.
"Guess we should be happy it's not spitting out quarters," he said, and laughed a nervous bark before swallowing.
"You know how much money we put in that thing?" Ed said,
and this time he spat his tobacco juice on the floor, despite the soiled bottle still dangling from his fingers, his elbows on the bar top.
"Nobody knew this was going to happen," Scott mumbled. "You said yourself that that old Jake made this thing damn near impossible to win, right?
Augie said.
Not enough that some bitch leeches off roughnecks when the iron's hot and all the rigs are running. Now all our money's gone to some big city clown ain't pulled a day of hard labor in his life.
Oh, it ain't going nowhere, Ed said, eyes now firmly locked on Scott's.
Now wait a minute, Tina snapped.
Nathaniel jumped at her tone, and she pulled him to her, holding him as she spoke.
First of all, we have every right to be here. Maybe we do live in a city, but this is America, and we're here spending our money and choosing to spend our vacation in your state. Yes, maybe it seems unfair that we won that money, but it's ours.
No one moved. Perhaps because she was unaccustomed to someone failing to listen to her, she smiled without humor and shrugged coldly.
You know what? Let's just let the sheriff handle this.
She dug into her jeans pocket for her phone. No signal out here, Darla said, her tone still void of life.
This never even should have happened.
She looked down at the rag in her hands and dropped it like it might bite her. Tina unlocked her phone and thumbed three numbers Scott knew to be 911.
No 911 service either, Ed said, and stretched.
A smile formed on his face as he hopped off the stool. The terrible undulation of the growing credits continued. Scott looked over to see the number had crept up in the thousands.
Now all we's asking for is you just take off, Ed said, and he wiggled his fingers to pantomime the action. You's going anyway. Probably couldn't wait to finish up your fancy beer and get back on the road in your electric car.
It's not electric, Scott said. Ed held up a hand as if commanding silence.
And go back to wherever the hell you came from. All you gotta do right now is exactly that.
He looked down at Nathaniel, and his smirk transformed into something like regret.
It's all right, little man. You and your folks here were just leaving, and we're just saying goodbye. Don't you worry about a thing.
Don't you talk to him, Tina said. She pulled Nathaniel behind her.
Mommy,
he said, but she shushed him with a stern look and an upturned index finger. His habit was to ask no fewer than a dozen times before accepting rejection, but something on his mom's face must have flipped a switch inside his toddler brain and told him to listen the first time.
It shouldn't have even happened,
Darla said again, louder this time.
What are you babbling about? Augie said.
Darla pointed to the machine, arm almost limp, listless look on her face.
He wouldn't have even won if I hadn't told the boy to save him face cards. I'm the reason you got that pot.
Ed blew a raspberry.
You think you's gonna win it instead? You don't even play. That's because I know better, she said. I was the one who told you about Jake. You'd still be pissing away your paychecks on them stupid machines if it weren't for me.
Augie jumped off his stool, his movement punctuated by the bass tone of the stool legs rubbing roughly against the floor's wooden planks.
None to piss away anymore, he said. We is making double your pay, city boy, and not a dime of debt to siphon it off. Now we're lucky to get a job driving the only crews left out to the site. Can't even get on a crew for half pay anymore. Back to buying gas from the ragheads.
Scott turned to see the total at 30,000. He knew the jackpot amount. The number literally stood in lights above his head. And yet, with each glance at the rising sum, new thoughts fired in his brain. The big number on the marquee felt lofty, with nothing to ground it. Just an amount, even if a sum he'd never had at one time in his life. More than his retirement account held, as if he had the option of touching it. But seeing the dollars tick up as fast as a score on a video game created a sense of euphoria in him, and want. When the smaller man, Ed, had told them to leave, he would have happily complied to ensure their safety. But now,
even with the threat of violence looming, with the men now standing and all but ensuring physical assault, a sense of ownership of that money formed and hardened.
It doesn't matter how much you put in, he said to the men. He turned to Darla. And so what if you offered some advice? Either way, that's our money, and we're leaving with that ticket.
He felt light, like he could float to the ceiling, could almost feel the wood bumping his head. Ed pulled a revolver from the insides of his coveralls, his gaze never leaving Scott. He moved it behind his back and dropped his eyes to Nathaniel, then back up to Scott. What did he mean? That he didn't want to scare the boy with the sight of the gun? Or that he would kill Scott's only son to get that ticket? As if on a delayed fuse, Tina pulled in a quick breath, full seconds after the gun entered play. She put her whole body in front of Nathaniel. The boy must have sensed his mother's apprehension as he remained quiet and clung to her legs. When the trilling tones stopped, everyone clapped eyes on the machine, like a song had broken off mid-chorus. The print button flashed. Above the machine, the progressive marquee had stopped its light show and returned to display $0. Scott lifted a hand to press the button when Darla spoke, now from behind the bar.
Don't,
she said, the voice almost pleading. Scott turned to see a shotgun atop the bar, her hand on the butt, the weight of it on the wooden countertop, its form hidden by the wooden lip, but obvious to the adults in the room.
Damn right, Ed said.
Augie had moved around him, blocking the path to the door. He held a long and stained hunting knife by his side, about as subtle as a clown nose, but not brandished. Ed spoke again, his sneer all but beaming now.
There's three of us, City, and there may be three of you, but that don't quite count, does it?
I ain't with you, Darla said. I'm taking that jackpot myself. It was my call that made him win anyhow, and this place will be closed within a year. That's my ticket the hell out of here.
The men wheeled on Darla, their jaws jutting out as if choreographed.
Are you out of your mind?
Augie growled, teeth clenched. Scott slapped his hand down on the print button, and all heads turned to him. He kept one hand skyward and pulled out the $52,000 ticket with the other.
Scott, what are you doing? Tina asked.
Gone was her earlier bombast, replaced by a mother's fear for her child. Scott moved slowly over to the table where they'd had lunch, what seemed like hours before.
You know, my father-in-law,
he started, then looked at Tina.
I guess I should call him boss, huh? He thinks my literature degree was a waste of money. He hired me anyway, but admits that he actually pays me less because I don't know shit about business.
He looked again at Tina.
Did you know that? Daddy keeps us from paying down my student loan debt because he wants to assure me just how dumb a degree in medieval literature really is.
Scott held up the ticket.
Thing is, it gives you perspective. You ever heard of the Canterbury Tales, Geoffrey Chaucer?
He looked at Darla, then Ed and Augie. No one answered him, but their confused stares prodded him.
No? Well, there's a story in there about three men who go looking for death. They want to find him and put a stop to the killing, only they don't know where to look. So they go to an inn, and the innkeeper tells them about this tree deep in the woods. He says they'll find death buried beneath it.
At the bar, Darla pulled the shotgun toward her. Ed turned her way and tensed visibly. Scott held up the ticket, like they had any doubt what it was or the value of it.
But when they dug, do you know what they found?
Augie sniffed.
What?
Scott put the ticket atop the glass of the lamp, the corner sticking inside the glass near the flame.
Gold.
All at once, Scott slid behind the table, grabbed his family, and headed for the door. Augie moved toward the table, opening passage outside. Ed dove after the ticket, while Darla skidded around the corner of the bar, shotgun still in hand. A cold wind assaulted them once outside, but Scott didn't delay. He all but dragged Tina to the car, zigzagging down the ramp. She had scooped Nathaniel up into her arms. Where normally the boy grew restless when held, wriggling to be set down, now he clung to her like a monkey to its mother's midsection. He'd managed to get Tina and Nate into the car before the first shot rang out. The pistol, if he had to guess at the sound of it, more high crack than low boom. But then the boom followed, one, then another, both barrels.
"Get in!"
Tina called from the passenger side. Scott meant to. It was the logical choice, the safest bet. They'd walk out a deadly situation no poorer than when they'd walked in. No one hurt, none of them, at least. They could continue on to Great Falls without a glance back. He looked around and saw no signs of life anywhere, not even another car on the road a half mile away. They'd done nothing wrong, not even when he'd all but dared them to fight over the ticket. Still, something pulled him back toward the ticket and whatever horror now lay inside.
"Scott, no! We're leaving right now!"
He bent down and looked inside the cab. As if releasing tension, Nathaniel had begun to cry, and Tina was comforting him with a hand on his belly.
"Now,"
she repeated, and her bottom lip quivered. He knew the right thing to do, the obvious thing, but he also knew that it would haunt him for years to come. What if the ticket was still in there, just waiting on the table? Sure, it could have burned up before they got to it, but probably not. It would just sit there till eventually someone happened on the scene, spotted it among the carnage, and pocketed it before calling the police. Why not him? He'd won it. He'd earned it. He needed it. Death had already come. Now, only the gold remained. He closed the car door and walked toward the bar. Tina honked the horn, held it down so that the blare of it suffused the air, unrelenting. But only a few steps lay between him and that money, enough to tell his father-in-law to stuff his job, maybe even enough to go back to school for his master's, get a teaching job like he'd wanted all along. After winding back up the stairway, he pulled open the door. The stench of gunpowder whipped past him on its way outside. He listened, but heard nothing. The horn stopped. He turned back to the car, and through the gray haze of the windshield, he saw his wife. Maybe he was misreading her expression, but he thought he saw something like pride mixed with the fear. And hadn't she nodded just a little?